Welcome back, everybody. I'm Rick Pettigrew. Our stories from this past week of Archaeologica are about a study documenting 10,000 years of gender disparity in European meat consumption, a stone quarry in South Africa demonstrating specialized resource extraction much earlier than expected, a DNA study of a Neolithic cemetery in France that reveals a population replacement, and an ancient Maya structure in Guatemala that helps to illustrate the shift from royal governance to a more open and transparent political culture. We'll get to those in a few seconds. Thanks to everyone for supporting our subscription platform, Heritage Broadcasting Service, available at heritagetac.org. We have hundreds of titles you can binge upon, including our recent video series about searching for the lost aircraft of Amelia Earhart. Please help us spread the word. Again, that link is heritagetac.org. Our tour program, TAC Tours, will continue in October 2026 with our tour of key sites in Turkey, including Göbekli Tepe and other sites at the root of human civilization. Registration is still open for that. The link to our tour program is at archaeologychannel.org/tours. Send us feedback on the Archaeology Channel Facebook page or post a message on our social networking site, ArchaeoSeek. And now, here's Laura Kennedy with the audio news from Archaeologica. We hope you find this to be a valuable part of your day.
Welcome to the audio news from Archaeologica. I'm Laura Kennedy, and these are the headlines in archaeological and historical news for the week of April 5th through the 11th, 2026. We begin this week by examining a dietary phenomenon that persisted over 10,000 years of European history, gender-based meal segregation. As reported by ConnectSci, a new study uses isotopic analysis to support the long-proposed idea that men systematically consumed more protein than women throughout history. The research team, led by Rosane Colletaire of the French National Institute for Preventive Archaeological Research and comprising archaeologists from France and Canada, detailed their findings in the journal PNAS Nexus. To conduct their analysis, the team referenced the remains of more than 12,000 individuals from 673 archaeological sites across Western Eurasia and the Mediterranean basin. In particular, they looked at the chemical signatures preserved in the bone collagen of each individual. Two isotope ratios allow researchers to assess someone's diet. Nitrogen ratios indicate animal protein consumption, while carbon ratios indicate protein from plant-based and marine foods. Given the geographic, cultural, and period differences between each burial site, comparing the isotope ratios posed a challenge. To correct for confounding variables like fertilization, irrigation, and climate variation, the team employed a statistical measure that researchers often use in economic studies, the interdecile ratio. This normalization method measures the spread between the bottom 10% and top decile of each group. This allowed the team to compare relative dietary inequality without factoring in local isotopic conditions. Across nearly every era they studied, the team found that men consistently overrepresented the top meat consumers. Only a few results did not entirely match this observation. This includes the Neolithic period, when diets were closest to being egalitarian as the first agricultural societies in Europe began to develop. In 5% of the sites surveyed, the female inhabitants, not their male counterparts, held preferential access to protein. This study provides the first large-scale quantitative evidence for this pattern of prioritizing protein intake for men and restricting access for women. Several factors likely contributed to the trend across cultures and centuries, ranging from food taboos to cosmological beliefs to misperceptions about female nutritional needs. Next, we go to the eastern region of South Africa, where a new study challenges long-held beliefs about the cognitive capabilities of our early ancestors. As reported by Science News Today, archaeologists from the University of Tübingen began investigating the Jojosi site with an international team of researchers in 2022. Located some 140 kilometers inland from the Indian Ocean, deep erosional gullies mark the area and expose millennia-old sediment layers to the open air. As the team described in the journal Nature Communications, they made a remarkable find within these gullies: pristine flakes of hornfels. This fine-grained metamorphic rock stood among the most prized materials for tool-making in the Stone Age. The team conducted their excavation carefully and thoroughly, sieving the sediment to recover every fragment of the hornfels they could find. In some spots, artifact concentrations reached as high as 2 million pieces per cubic meter. They recovered production waste, hammerstones, and cobbles that had undergone quality testing, all hallmarks of a dedicated manufacturing operation. Doctoral student Günter Müller took on the task of creating refits. He reassembled the discarded stone flakes back into the cores that the toolmakers originally struck them from. He successfully completed 353 of these three-dimensional puzzles, allowing the team to retrace the sequence of toolmaking decisions that the site's ancient inhabitants made. Notably, researchers found very few finished tools at Jojosi, a sign that these early humans dedicated the site strictly to their work with the hornfels. When they finished, they took their completed tools back to their home base. Through luminescence dating, the team determined that activity at Jojosi began at least 220,000 years ago and continued for another 100,000 years. Numerous generations of human ancestors returned to the same location to extract the same material. According to the researchers, this long-term consistency points to a cultural memory and degree of social organization that far exceeds what we previously attributed to early modern humans. We now visit northern France, where a new DNA study illuminates another piece of the story of population replacement in Western Europe that took place some 5,000 years ago. As reported by Phys.org, a team of researchers from the University of Copenhagen, overseen by Eske Villerslev and Martin Sikora, sequenced 132 genomes from individuals buried in the megalithic burial site at Bourie. This Neolithic gallery grave lies about 50 kilometers north of Paris. The archaeologists found that the community used the site across two distinct burial phases, separated by a significant gap in which no one was buried at all. As they described in the journal Nature, Ecology, and Evolution, this pause in burial activity also occurred in Scandinavia, northern Germany, and central Europe around a similar period. The Phase 1 population, active between 3200 and 3100 BC, possessed mixed ancestry from early Neolithic France and Iberian farming communities. They laid their dead to rest within large, multi-generational family groups in extended body positions along the tomb's main axis. This was likely a tight-knit community, especially given that nearly three-quarters of those buried had a close biological relative interred at the site. Notably, the demographic profile of this group suggests excessive mortality, pointing to an event that heavily affected the young residents, such as war, famine, or a disease outbreak. The team did identify traces of Yersinia pestis among their remains. This is the bacterium responsible for the Black Death, the Plague of Justinian, and other historically significant infectious diseases. The Phase 2 population used the tomb from roughly 2900 to 2470 BC. They largely descended from Iberian Neolithic populations from the south and did not maintain the burial traditions of their predecessors. Instead, they placed individuals in flexed body positions with no consistent orientation. This group included fewer related individuals, indicating that this community was socially defined rather than biologically linked. Comparing the two genomes, researchers found no genetic continuity between the two groups. Pollen analysis from the Paris Basin demonstrates that forest regeneration occurred between 2900 and 2500 BC, indicating that people had abandoned agricultural lands and that activity declined sharply. This confirms a genuine population replacement from the south only several centuries before. The Phase 2 community was not the last shift in the area's demographics. Around 2500 BC, populations from the steppe region of Ukraine and southern Russia first appeared in the Paris Basin, marking another population replacement that would shape Europe for the next 5 millennia. Our final story brings us to northern Guatemala, where archaeologists are examining the connections between ancient Maya architectural styles and the forms of governance in their respective eras. Dr. Christina Halperin from the University of Montreal led this research team, outlining their work in the journal Antiquity. As reported by Phys.org, excavators working at the lowland site of Ucanal unearthed a multi-level stone structure. Workers constructed this building, known as Structure K1, during the Terminal Classic period, which spanned AD 810 to 1000. This era was bookended by two distinct forms of Maya governance. During the Classic period, from roughly AD 300 to 810, Maya rulers reigned as divine figures at the center of deeply centralized systems. They asserted authority through palaces and pyramids that towered over their subjects, cutting them off from political decisions made behind closed doors. The later post-Classic period, between 1200 and the Spanish arrival in 1521, saw Maya governments structured by council-style decision-making. Despite understanding much about these two eras, scholars know little about the transition in leadership styles between them. According to Dr. Halperin, scholars have previously noted that the Terminal Classic period was marked by political instability and population loss, raising the question of how the Maya worked to calm the chaos. As they examined Structure K1, they found that it likely played a key role in the shifting methods of governance in its heyday. Designed as a colonnaded open hall, it appears to have been a council house where kings, nobles, and lineage leaders could gather. Since this building stood near a large public plaza, their disputes, political negotiations, and ceremonial events took place in full view of the public. This construction project was an intentional step toward a more open and transparent political culture. That wraps up the news for this week. For more stories and daily news updates, visit Archaeologica on the World Wide Web at archaeologica.org, where all the news is history. Also, be sure to check out our growing subscription platform, Heritage Broadcasting Service, at heritagetac.org. I'm Laura Kennedy, and I'll see you next week.
This has been the audio news from Archaeologica, presented by the Archaeology Channel. Be sure to check back with us next week for our next edition. You can spread the word about the audio news by clicking on the Share This link on our audio news webpage, or just by telling your friends. Thanks very much for stopping by.